This is Jim O'Neill, a technology evangelist in the Boston area, and I'd like to welcome you to this installment of the Practical Azure series. Today we'll be looking at Windows Azure Q Storage in conjunction with Windows Azure Cloud Services, which I introduced in the last episode. So to quickly review, all flavors of Windows Azure Storage, Qs included, share some common traits. They are all accessed via HTTP or HTTPS as a part of an account that can store up to 100 terabytes of data. And a given Azure subscription can contain multiple ones of these 100 terabyte storage accounts. For queue storage in particular, a given queue, say for incoming requests, that's when within a storage account named My Account, would look something like this. You'd have a URL that said myaccount.queue.core.windows.net/incoming or whatever the name of that queue happened to be. Now, all storage is REST-based as well, so there's APIs that have various different language bindings. So you can use .NET, PHP, Node, Java, and so on, but they all underneath the covers use a RESTful HTTP binding to the back-end storage service. And lastly, since Azure storage accounts have redundancy built in, queues take advantage of that as well. So there's always three copies of each queue and each message in the queue at the given data center, and those copies can provide the high availability that's inherent inside of Windows Azure Storage. As part of the last episode, I included a simple cloud service that reverses the words and word order within a given input. So the way the application works, it's a web application with a web role in the front end. I enter some text and I hit the key here to reverse the text. Now, because I'm using a web and a worker role here and I want this to be a very performant type application, I don't know how long that back-end job is going to last. The reversing of the string is probably pretty quick, but in general it could be a much longer running process, and I don't want to hold up the front-end process, preventing the user from doing other things in the website, waiting for the back-end to finish. So the way this works is I submit the text, and then what happens is that a queue request gets logged, and on the back end I've got a worker role that's essentially just looking for incoming queue requests and processing those queue requests. When it gets to the point where it's ready to process that request and handles it, it will actually update a table, Windows Azure Table Storage, with the results. So here you can see the update from Hello Cloud. Now it did that pretty quickly because I was talking throughout that whole process, but what I can do here is let's do Hello Cloud 2 and run it again. And you'll notice we have a queued process. It's not done yet though, but while it's working, I can do Hello Cloud 3 and Hello Cloud 4 and so on, and just keep working in the front end site and let that back end essentially do the processing in an asynchronous process. What this provides me is the ability to scale both the back end and the front end independently, and it also provides a better end user experience because the user's not watching the spinning donut as he's waiting for, in this case, the string to be reversed. So how did all that happen? How did I implement that? So what I'm going to do is shut the application down. Let's just take a look at the code behind all this. So as you know, we have a front-end website, ASP.NET website, that is a web role, so that's called reverse web, and then we also have reverse worker, which is our back-end worker role. Both of these roles are part of a cloud service, so they know about each other in some regard, or packaged together under the same URL. Let's start with the front end. So I have a front end default ASPX page, very, very simple page. Let's take a look at the code behind that. So what you'll see here is I actually have set up just a simple class. This is a data transfer class that is storing the request ID. So this is the GUID that gets created when you create a new request to put on the queue, the input string, and the reversed output string. So this is just, again, an entity that's going to be stored in a Windows Azure table as the answer to some input. When the page loads, it's pretty simple. All it does is it gets all of the requests that happen to have been completed. So what it's really doing is it's going inside of that table. So it's using my Windows Azure Storage account that's up in the cloud, creating a what's called a table client. So this is essentially like a connection string to that Windows Azure table. It basically says, I want to get information from the table called Reverso. And if that table doesn't happen to exist for whatever reason, go ahead and create it. If I create it, it's obviously going to be empty, but this will help me keep the application running smoothly in case something gets clobbered on the back end. What I'm going to do next is issue a query. So what this is doing is issuing a new table query, against the Reverso table, and it's basically adding a where clause, and that where clause essentially gets translated to partition key, which is sort of the primary key, part of the primary key of the Windows Azure table, where that partition key value is equal to the user. So the user is just a string that I have in the upper right corner of my Reverso application. So everybody that's running Reverso has their own username and their own results in this table. Then I simply execute the query, and by executing the query, I get an IEnumerable, an array of IEnumerables, and then I can data bind that to my grid view. So that's the bottom of the Reverso front end screen. Now the more interesting part is when I actually enter some text to Reverso. What I do then is I call a method called QNewRequest. So QNewRequest is the piece of work that's going to put something on that Windows Azure storage queue. Now to the end user, what I show inside of the window is just a string that basically says, I've requeued this request, here's your queue ID number for this particular request, come back later and you'll see the results when they're available. So queue new request is the interesting piece here. Let's take a look and see how that works. So queue new request, the first thing it does is it generates a unique ID for that particular request. So typically you want to be able to monitor each individual request in case something goes wrong. So we'll use a GUID there. We're going to send a message via this queue. So a message is essentially just a string of bytes. And it can be in any format that you want. I'm using JSON here to send across the username, the request ID, so that GUID, and also the input text that's supposed to be reversed. I'm using JSON here. You can use XML. You can use whatever format you want. JSON's kind of convenient in this case, and it's pretty lightweight, so I'm going to use that. Next, I'm going to establish essentially a connection string to that queue. So again, I'm going to Azure Storage, and I'm getting the queue reference for Reverso. So there's a queue named Reverso as well as a table named Reverso, two separate elements of Windows Azure Storage. Also create that queue if it's not there. And then we're going to add a message. So adding a message to a queue is simply pushing whatever payload, whatever string that you want inside of that queue. And I'm returning the request ID so that I can use it later on inside of my client page up here in QNewRequest. So at this point, the front-end client is pretty much done. He's basically said, I've got a new request. Here's the string that needs to be reversed. Pass that, essentially push that over the wall and put it onto the queue, and somebody will get to it whenever they're ready. Meanwhile, on the front end of this application, I'll be able to issue additional requests, take advantage of other functionality of that application as well. So what happens on the other end? And that's the worker process. So if we go into the worker role on the other end, we'll see a similar pattern here. We'll also see a table entity definition. So this again references the Windows Azure table where I'm storing all of the results. I could have put this in a separate assembly and shared it between the web role and the worker role if I wanted to. The interesting part of the worker role is this run method, as we saw in the last episode. So the run method is essentially an endless loop. And what happens is every time the run method comes to the top, it looks to see if the queue has a message. So in this case, the queue, again, is a reference to our Reverso queue. So the worker role is looking to see if there's a new message on that queue. If there is a new message, it decides to process that message. And process that message comes down to here. And what does it do? Well, it pops the message off the queue. It takes that string that we serialized as JSON and deserializes it into an object. And then it calls our Reverso function. And the Reverso function is the real function here. So the Reverso function is the one that actually does the string reversal. And I've actually faked it out a little bit. I've basically made it take a little bit longer than it really needs to so I could demonstrate how it's very asynchronous in this regard. So if your process took 10 seconds or a minute or whatever, it would be working as part of the worker role. Again, the web role would be free to do other things. So I've created a new result. Result structure that has the input and the output string, so it's got the answer in it as well, and then I execute an insert on the Reverso table. So this puts the results into the Windows Azure table storage, and at that point, now the front end can look at Windows Azure table storage and it sees the answer and can display that answer to the end user. Now there's one more statement here that is incredibly important, and that is deleting the message from the queue. So the way that Windows Azure queue storage works is When I pull the message off of the queue, which I did up here, get message, it essentially makes that message invisible to other consumers of the queue. So if I have multiple worker roles out there pulling from the queue, they would all be looking at the same queue. When one worker role pulls a message out, the other ones don't see it. But that message is kind of still there. It's a little bit in limbo. It becomes invisible. So while the worker role that pulled the message out is working on it, it's not visible to other worker roles. If the worker role that pulled it out happened to fail or took too long or something along those lines, that message might pop back up on the queue and another worker role would see it. That may or may not be the right thing. So if this process happened to crash for some reason, process request crashed for some reason, I might want another worker role to pick up that task and execute it appropriately, because otherwise that task would have been lost. What might happen though is this guy that took the task off the queue might just have taken an extra long time. So maybe he took a minute instead of the expected 30 seconds. 30 seconds is kind of the default timeout for a message. So if I took a minute, but I got done successfully, what would happen then is this guy finished it, and another worker role saw the message pop back up on the queue, grabbed it, and executed it again. So in this case, we've executed the message twice. For this application, it's not a big deal. We just reverse the string twice. We'll have the same record in there. We'll be in the record in the table twice, and it won't be a problem. In some cases, though, that might not be the right thing to do. If you were debiting a account in a bank, for instance, you don't want to take out $20 twice. So you have to incorporate into your application this concept of idempotence and make sure that a given message, if executed twice or processing executed twice on a given message, doesn't really affect the outcome. So that's something you need to take into account when you're building cloud patterns and building web and worker roles and queues and so on. Make sure that you're accommodating that fact that a queue message could actually be seen multiple times. So that's pretty much all there is to setting up this type of scenario. So again, web role, worker role, queue in between. Be careful that you take care that the queue message is only going to be processed once. And if it's processed multiple times, make sure that it doesn't matter that it's being processed multiple times. You get the same result at the end. To learn more about Windows Azure Queues, here are some handy links for you. Beginning, of course, with the link to get a free 90-day trial of Azure so you can try this feature out on your own. I've also included a few how-to and getting started links, and the last one here will be of interest to those of you who have poked around a bit more with Windows Azure. As we'll see in an upcoming episode, there's actually another queuing option that's part of the Service Bus feature in Windows Azure, and this last reference here will help you determine which of those two options is best for your specific requirements. Thanks for joining me for this quick look into the use of Windows Azure Queue Storage. In the next episode, we'll continue in the vein of improving the end-user experience of our cloud services sample, this time via caching.